In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Bond hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to another episode of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, of course, available throughout the Odyssey family of stations and networks and wherever you can enjoy a podcast. We hope you enjoy it, like it, and share it. I'm Brian Shackman, along with co-host John Senecal. We are coming off a series, a Yankees-Red Sox series, and that's what this podcast is about. So what we're going to do today, we're going to recap a little bit of the series and what it means for both teams, because they're going to be playing again very soon, sort of update their chances long term. And then I think we want to talk about a little bit of the fan interference from the weekend too, and then whatever seems to come up. John, how you doing?
Good, Brian. For the three games they did get to play, it was definitely full of all sorts of interesting stuff.
I'm not a huge Yankee hater per se, but the second game of the series on Saturday night, I thought was awful. And I know you when we were communicating off mic, you think the complaints of the Red Sox on the check swing and the umpires were garbage, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you go back and look at them, even my 11-year-old son, I mean, just actually just turned 12, could say, it's... They went, And you can definitely see it on the replay. But, in the heat of the moment, it's hard, It's very hard to call. And I've always said to myself, why are they calling down and looking down to the umpires at first or third? Usually I feel like that could be something that you could go to replay on real quick and find it out fast, like instantly. And all you got to do is go to that upper replay or the side camera, and you could have fixed cameras on that and just
you could make the decision in a half a second.
A light could come on or something, and it could just be a red or a green light. He went red light, next done.
Yeah, it didn't bother me so much either because it looked so close. And to me, I'm anti-replay, but I was fine with the call. I didn't really have a huge problem. My big problem was the weather.
Oh,
it was
awful.
But the thing is that it was a classic home, they get the lead and they call the game?
Right.
Really?
But the one thing I was impressed with, we'll get up to that point, but the weather, the pitchers actually pitched very well. Evaldi and Cole pitched great, given
the
circumstances.
So in the wet weather, without the spider tack.
Without the spider tack, too. I was going to say the same thing. He's kind of starting to prove himself that maybe he didn't need the spider tack to be that good.
Well, again, I'm not a huge fan of him, but I will tell you that Gerrit Cole got himself into trouble early and got himself out of trouble.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, that's the sign of a pitcher who's kind of has something going, because he did. He could have let up a couple runs early, and he didn't. And I think that was the most impressive thing from his start. And when, it used to happen with Messina, too. I'm interested in your take. With Messina, if you wanted to get to him, you better get to him early.
Right.
Because he's only going to get better. And even with the technology about how hitters do better the second and third time through, the really good pitchers, that doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
No, because they get better second and third time
through. Yeah. And that was what I was always impressed about with guys like Messina. And I think Gerrit Cole's got a little bit of that, too.
Yeah. And it really is the good pitchers that can do that. The Maddux, the Glavins, in our generation, these guys, even I'll even say Verlander, regardless of, what he might have been tacking on his fingers,
Right. Well, I mean, listen, you come out of the series, the Yankees went 2-3, and I want to talk about the Red Sox and what I think it shows about them. But I have a definite opinion on what it shows about the Yankees, but I want to know your take. If they went 2-3, they're still well behind. I mean, and they did it with a minor league outfield and no Aaron Judge. What do you think?
Everyone will say, most Yankee fans will say, this is the spark they need. Bring some new flavor in, like they did with the Bernie Williams and the Kevin Mosses and the Oscar Azucars and the early 90s. But, TBD, that's my take on it. Still 7 games back. I would have liked to seen them play the 4 games, to be honest with you. Right. I really think that the Yankees, could have gained more. And when it comes down to it, that being 6 games back, or whatever, we all know baseball can come down to 1 game, So it would have been nice to have that game back. Granted, we might not have won it. Who knows? But it would have been nice to see a full series. But they do play 10 more times. So getting back to your question, I'm not sold yet. Like you said, you got to get Judge back, and I'm worried that this time off for Judge is not going to be helpful for him. He's been the most consistent player the Yankees have had this season, and he's now sitting around doing nothing, all because of COVID.
So I would say I think it exposes real issues with the Red Sox as a first place team, but I don't think this is a sign of a takeoff for the Yankees at all.
No, and they do have 10 games left. You know, four more coming up next week.
Right. I mean, but if they say they sweep all 10, that doesn't mean they're going to go into first place, because you know that Toronto and Tampa are going to win some games in the interim.
Exactly.
So I don't think you can look at it that way. My point is that I still don't think the culture of the Yankees has changed. I still think the team is too flawed, and I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But that's my opinion, and I think if they trade Aaron Judge, they're crazy. And I mean, you pointed out to me last week that he actually hadn't missed that much time, you know, obviously before this COVID situation, and that was eye opening for me. But I still think you don't. I mean, like the Mookie Betts thing. No matter what you do, you got to hold on to Aaron Judge.
No, you're not trading Aaron Judge.
No.
I don't think I mean, he is your most marketable player. He is the face of your team, and he is a great person to have as the face of your team. I don't see anything happening wrong with him, you know what I mean? So it's like he reminds me of a big Derek Jeter in a way, you know? He's that kind of guy. And no, you don't trade him.
So, but I don't think it's a sign of some big turnaround. But I will say about the Red Sox, who now, you know, coming out of the weekend and lost four and seven of their last 11 games, excuse me. And what I've really realized is that you can't win a championship when you get no production out of first base.
No, and you talked about that last one.
Yeah, but even more so when they put Arroyo, and I love Arroyo. He's had some of the clutchest hits of anyone on that team. Of course, he tweaks himself just trying to stretch for a ball. And Bobby Dalbec, he hasn't proven yet he can carry it. Maybe it's something they do at the trade deadline. But to me, that is like, I'm just like, holy crap. When JD and Bogarts and Devers don't hit, they got nothing. And if they got to find a way to make sure that, you know, whether it's Vasquez or Dalbec or whomever, they need to get... They need offense out of that first base spot, or they won't go anywhere.
Well, hey, Anthony Rizzo might be up for grabs.
I think he'd be great in a Boston uniform, by the way. The question is, what do you give up?
I mean, I'm sure the Red Sox can give up somebody for him. I mean, come on. Well, it's Anthony Rizzo.
Chaim Bloom doesn't like to give up talent. And the funny thing is, and if you haven't followed it, and I know Red Sox fans do, their 25-man roster, and especially we're talking the 12th man through the 25th man, is way better than it was just 2 years ago. And he doesn't like to give up depth, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I would make the deal. I mean, it depends. I don't know what they're going to ask for. But, I mean, your point is you don't think the price would be steep?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. He's a rental, total rental, because he's a free agent after this season. So,
right.
I mean, you're right. The Red Sox shouldn't give up a lot, but hey, the Cubs are tanking right now, and he's a big, valuable piece, as is Chris Bryant.
Right. I like Chris Bryant's gut.
Hey, you could trade him Blaze Jordan and Jeter Downs and totally fleece your prospect system.
I would like to see. I mean, I like those two guys you mentioned, and I think they could help create a championship team, because I don't think, my point is that coming out of this weekend, I still think they can make the playoffs, but I don't think they win a title with the roster as it's...
Well, listen, if they can get Anthony Rizzo, I think they can put together a package regardless and not have those guys or some real... I think the Red Sox can make that happen. They'll figure something out.
Hmm. And what do you think, like, to me, like, so if you look at what the Yankees need to, and I said this to, you know, a producer of this podcast, Matt Sorois, who's a big Yankee fan, we'll have on the show at some point, that the Yankees still need to win like 10 in a row. I don't care what they do against the Red Sox. They still got to go on a huge run.
They can't string together anything. I mean, they're 7-3 over their last 10, but what happens is usually, next thing you know, they lose four games in a row or four out of their next five, you know, or something like that. It's just they never string it together.
Right, but they're winning series. And they always say if you win series, you make the playoffs, right? The Red Sox have lost their last three series. And the Yankees, I don't know how many in a row they've won, but to me, that's basically finishing one or two games above 500 every week, right? And so is there enough time in the season going into late July to make a run that way? And I would argue that they can't just, you know, in a four-game set, you know, a three-game set, win two. In a four-game set, they got to win three, and they got to get some sweeps. I mean,
especially,
you know,
against the guys ahead of them. I mean, they have to sweep the Red Sox. You have to. You have to sweep them, and you have to go through Tampa. You have to take those games from Tampa coming up. You have to. And if you get those seven games right there, you're sitting pretty good, and you hopefully, by the trading deadline, can figure it out and maybe you make a move. But like we said before, their next 10 games are huge. We talked about coming out of the break, their season could be over August 1st.
So my question to you, the last thing is, I mean, people made a big deal of Gleyber Torres hitting over the weekend. I just didn't know if you had a
he has back-to-back games with home runs. He matched his total out of the break for the season. You got, again, consistency. You got to do that over the next couple weeks and keep producing to be, you know, to impress me and Yankee fans and baseball fans in general. Two home runs in back-to-back games is nothing. Look around the league. Guys are doing that in their sleep.
Right. Right. All right. So we know the series resumes on a Thursday, the 22nd, and we have pitching matchups for the first three, I believe, and I'm going to give them to you, and you give me your hot take. You have J-Mo, Jordan Montgomery against Eduardo Rodriguez.
Wait, hold on a second. So you're going to tell me that the Yankees already know their three pitchers for that series?
I'm just saying it's officially listed.
All right. I know that the Red Sox have been consistent with pitching. You and I had talked about that. amazing.
Yeah, before we go to the breakdown quickly, the three games we know the starters, give people that factoid.
All right, so the Red Sox leading up to the break, right? All their starters, the five main starters, had 18 starts.
Incredible.
18 games started, every single one of them.
They went on a five-person rotation uninterrupted for the entire first half of the season.
Unbelievable. It's crazy. And the highest ERA was Eduardo Rodriguez.
Who's your number one? Who supposedly was your number one. And with the Yankees, what, had two starters with 18?
They had two starters. Yes, they had Cole and Montgomery, and then they had Taillon 17 and Dominguez 15 starts.
Herman 15.
I mean Dominguez Herman. I'm getting ahead of myself. I want the Martian up. Hey, you know I'm going to see the Martian tomorrow night. I'm going to be in Tampa, Florida tomorrow night, and I'm going to see the Martian play.
Really?
Yeah, he's been promoted to the Tampa Tarpons, and I'm going to good old George M. Steinbrenner Field with the family, and I will see him play. Hopefully he's playing. He had a day off the other day, but this is their first game coming out of the weekend. So
we'll get a scouting report on our next episode.
Scouting report on the Martian.
So let's get a quick thought on the starters before we
go. Okay, yeah, let's get the starters.
You got J-Mo against Eduardo.
Coming off his last start against the Yankees, Eduardo Rodriguez, I'm going to take. J-Mo does not get the support. He just doesn't.
Also, I feel like he's like a guy who will always give you 5 to 6, and he'll let up a couple runs, and you need to score 6 to win.
He's like the bad Andy Pettit.
No, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, he's a good major league pitcher who probably needs some offense, and his ERA will always be like, you know, 4.
Right, and he's a lefty. As long as he's healthy, he's going to stay in the major leagues.
He's going to have a job. Yep, okay, so you give edge to E-Rod on that one. Then Gerrit Cole, I mean, again, a great matchup. Gerrit Cole against Nathan Eovaldi.
You know what? Hopefully it's not raining, and hopefully those two battle it out. I mean, I love to see runs, but man, I was impressed with how well they did. I'm going to go with Cole, though, and keep the streak going.
I was impressed. Again, I'm not a fan. But I think that I was impressed with what he did. And then you have Taillon, or whatever you say his name is, against Martin Perez.
You know, I guess keep riding the streak. He's been pitching great. Yeah. I mean, Taillon is lights out lately. He's been very good.
You got two of three in Boston, over Boston. In the fourth game, there's no listing for the Yanks, but they have Nick Pivetta, of course, on Sunday, July 25th for the Sox. And we'll see what happens. I mean, the Yankees got a couple against Philly in the interim, and the Red Sox have Toronto. I think the Red Sox need to just get a win. I think they feel like they're really struggling. The word is scuffling.
It's funny how, you know, all we talked about is the Red Sox and Tampa, and they have to play those couple against Philly, and no one cares about it.
I know. It's funny. It is true. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. The other thing I want to bring up, and you might have something else you want to talk about, but, you know, I have very strong feelings about what happened. And it's not New York. Like, it's not an anti-New York thing, because it happens in a lot of places. But the fan throwing the ball back at Alex Verdugo bothers me for a lot of reasons.
How did he hit him with that ball? Did you see that guy who threw the ball and how far away he was? I want to know how possibly he could have hit him.
I don't know. There are witnesses that said he
I'm sure. I'm not doubting it for a minute. I'm not doubting it at all. But like, he didn't seem like the kind of guy with that precision of accuracy.
And I love how he was like faking like he was sitting as like a good
shaking
dude.
More like. Did you see the video of him shaking? Yeah. He was shaking like a leaf.
Well, I mean, he made a huge mistake. And by the way, how does he keep his girlfriend? There's no way she stays
with apparently
him
he's been banned from all Major League Baseball parks for life.
Yeah, for life. Which is harsh, but I think
How do you do that, though? Like, how does that happen? How can you keep that guy? It must be something they have to trace his name or something. How can you do that?
The bottom line is, I don't think they can.
No, they can, but it's just a pretty nice stain on your record.
Right, and it's also a really good thing to market that says, listen, if you do this something like this, you'll be banned for life.
It's a show of force on the border.
Sure, it's like a deterrent, right? Yep. It's a wall.
Yep. It's exactly what it is.
But, it bothered me because you have Alex Verdugo, and again, love or hate him, love or hate the Red Sox. If you ever watch baseball on TV, he's been the most popular guy to be mic'd up maybe in baseball.
He did it the next night, too. They mic'd him up.
Which I thought was a great move by him to do, sort of sending the message that I was glad to see. Because here's my point, is that there's already enough separation between fan and player. Like, these guys make so much money. There's so many crazy kooks out there. And most of them are apprehensive to go near people, let alone engage with them.
Right.
I mean, you even get it. When I went to a Cape League game, even those guys are hesitant, some of them. And so, like, if you do this thing and you have one of the most engaging guys in the game, and then you piss him off where he doesn't want to talk to people, to me, like, you want to find ways to bring people closer to the players.
And absolutely.
To me, it just builds another barrier. So it's not like, oh, that only happens in the Bronx, because I think it's garbage. I think it happens everywhere.
No, it happens everywhere.
But I think it was an awful, awful thing.
So to put in Verdugo's perspective, so I went to a concert Friday night, Luke Bryan concert, right? So I'm in, not on the lawn, thank God. I would never do that ever again, any lawn. I'm too old for that. But I'm standing inside, like, at my chair, and all of a sudden, late in the concert, this beer can comes flying by us, crushed up, and hits the lady in front of me.
No way.
So we're still probably at least a half an hour left in the concert. And it hit the girl, the lady in front of me, and I didn't even, like, notice it at first. And she turned around, and they thought, like we had did it or something. And then they quickly realized, like, obviously we didn't do it. But you couldn't tell who did it. But I literally spent the next half hour of that concert, just nervous, like something else was going to come. Now, can you imagine what a player feels like when a baseball is thrown at him to stand out there and actually be performing at the top of your game, not thinking that something else is going to hit you, regardless of how many cameras are on the field or in the stands? People are crazy. We know that. So I have no problem with the way he reacted. I have no problem with the way Cora reacted. And I think it's just, like you said, it's stupid and it's just bad for the game. It's just bad in general, you know?
Yeah, I just, even if a stupid left fielder, when I'm in my seats at Fenway, waves to my wife, it's like makes her day,
right?
I mean, it's crazy that it does, but it does. And the opportunities for those things to happen are so few and far between. I just think if we part of the reason we do this podcast, we love baseball and we want to grow interest in the game. And I think that's why, even things like Barstool, which is controversial, like, their baseball folks, they just love the game.
And they jumped all over that. Both sides jumped all over that.
I think it's a bipartisan agreement. It's garbage, right? And there's a way to be funny and clever and this and that, but paying for $45 tickets or a $100 ticket doesn't give you the right to do that stuff. Well, and I think actually a point I hadn't thought about, like, you want your athlete to be focused on the game and not worry about anything else. And
right.
I hadn't even considered that.
I mean, you look at those guys and how they have to perform, and if they're off by a fraction of an inch in that sport and the speed of that sport, it's going to affect them, and it's going to matter in the game. So yeah, it's a big deal, and it shouldn't happen again. Hopefully that's a lesson, and I don't see it being a big deal, but there's always the bad apple here and there.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shankman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Any last thoughts on what's going on, about the series to come, about your feeling on the Yanks, and so on and so forth?
Well, I'll tell you something. Like, going by with the weather we've had around here and my kids canceling games and stuff, I just want to see some baseball being played where it's not raining. Hey, and so we can get some good matchups. But you know what? Hey, listen, I feel like over the weekend, this rivalry has come back a little bit. You know, we talked about the Yankees-Red Sox and the Yankees-Astros fluctuating back and forth with rivalry here. But, you know, it's good to see, fan BS aside, it's good to see that these teams are kind of, fighting each other a little bit more. And I kind of think the Yankees spanking it to them last night might have been good for the rivalry.
I agree. And 40,000... plus in Yankee Stadium doesn't hurt either, because that place is different.
And we talked about that too. Who has the advantage when it comes back, right? The crowd.
Yeah, and I really think that, in terms of being home, I mean, they were drawing 25. I mean, listen, they got good fans for the Mets, but duh. But outside of the Mets, I mean, they're averaging, you know, anywhere from 20 to 35. So
right.
to draw 40, I think Yankee Stadium becomes an advantage. I do. But I think you have to get to, like, that number, 35 plus, to do it.
Yep.
And that's key. And I think it's been the same at Fenway. When Fenway is buzzing, it makes a difference for the fans. And what you realize, in my final thought, it would be, it affects the players in a way that's really good, too. Like, I think the Red Sox players, they had forgotten so much of what it felt like to play in front of a packed Fenway Park,
yep,
where no one's throwing crap at each other, but it's just a buzz. And I think they get jacked up by it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, have a great trip. I can't wait to get the feedback on what do you call him again?
The Martian.
The Martian.
So I'll see the Martian. Listen, so I'll see the Martian on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And then I will be Friday night. I will see our friend Bobby Dickerson.
Nice.
In Miami against the Marlins. So,
did he get you some sweet seats?
Well, no.
I guess you can get them anyway.
Yeah, no, I bought the seats because I don't listen. I've been to enough player and coach seat given to me games where you don't know what you're gonna get, man. You can get anything from sitting next to, you know, whoever famous person to sitting up next to some dude who's been drinking his face off all day.
Right. So you want to control your destiny.
I've learned enough that you control your destination. If they offer them up the tickets, you take them too, and you flip-flop and you decide what's best. But we do have great seats for that, and hopefully it looks like there's people on the field still, but hopefully this COVID stays away and we can get the field passes and get down on the field and talk to some of the players. The boys keep clamoring for me to try to get them to meet Tatis.
Well, either way, if they could see him in BP or something, I mean, how great would that
absolutely
be?
There's, I'm telling you, man, you've been on the field before. There's nothing like sitting down on the field next to those guys watching them take BP and hearing the crack of the bat and how they talk and, you know, how they go about their business, Brian.
Yep, 100%. I've been at Fenway opening day, you know, half dozen plus on the field, and it is just, it's a privilege, and I love it. And listen, I love doing this with you, John. Have a great trip. It's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is another episode of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Listen to us on the Odyssey family of networks, but also wherever you enjoy your podcast, and we will see you next time.